Hello everyone, my name is Ki and this is Metamorphoses. Last time, Octaon was brutally murdered by his own dogs and similarly by pure godhood. This time, a prophecy goes exactly as foretold and someone gets what they honestly did not deserve. This is Book 3, Episode 3, Narcissism at its Finest. After Semele's son was born, twice technically, once out of his mother's womb and once out of Jupiter's thigh, it was apparently time for some relaxation. Jupiter is probably slightly drunk and decides it's a great idea to start an argument with Juno. So, presumably from the other side of the room, Jupiter shouts at Juno that women get more pleasure out of sex than men. Juno says this is not true. This seems like a very interesting argument to them, but to me it just seems weird. You like sex better. No, you do. Anyway, they decide that they can't actually find the correct answer and should find someone who can. And so they go to Tiresias. Now, he's an interesting guy, shows up in a lot of myths when you least expect him. Why would they go to Tiresias, of all people? Well, the answer is simple. Tiresias had spent part of his life as a woman and part as a man, so he should know the answer to the question. The way this works for him is interesting. One day, Tiresias, who was born a man, is walking around, and he finds two snakes getting it on in a bush. And then he does the logical thing, and of course, pokes at the snakes with a stick. And then he gets turned into a woman. Long live mythology. Tiresias lives as a woman for 7 years, and then he finds the same snakes again. Logic dictates that if poking them once changed his gender, then poking them again should change it again. And shockingly, that works. Tiresias is a man again. So Jupiter and Juno ask him to decide which of them is right. After probably sweating profusely at having to decide an argument between the king of the gods and his wife, Tiresias says that Jupiter is right. It is women who get more pleasure out of sex. Juno is slightly mad. That would never have gone right for poor Tiresias. Juno makes Tiresias lose his eyesight. Jupiter thinks this is a slight overreaction, but can't actually return what Juno has taken, so he gives Tiresias the ability to see into the future. So if you ever see a myth with a blind guy who can see the future, that's probably him. Tiresias decides to go with the flow and travels across the country, telling people his prophecies. One of these people was the nymph Liriope, who had a beautiful child, a boy called Narcissus. She asked Tiresias if he will live a long life and reach old age. Tiresias told her that he would, as long as he did not know himself. This seems like a very weird prophecy for a long time, until Narcissus died, and the truth of the prophecy was made clear. When Narcissus is 16, he's already quite a popular guy. Many boys and girls are deeply in love with him. Narcissus is not interested. Ovid cites arrogance as the reason he rejects them all, but maybe he really just wasn't interested. One day, he's hunting, and a nymph called Echo sees him. Echo likes to talk, but she can only say what other people have said and cannot form her own words. And here Ovid spoils Echo's ending. He tells us that Echo was still a nymph, and not just a sound. It seems that Echo will indeed become just that, an echo. But still, even now, Echo can only say the last words someone else has already said. How did this come about? Not to worry, a helpful explanation is given to us. It's Juno's fault. Whenever Jupiter was doing his thing again with some nymphs, Echo would stall Juno by talking incessantly to her, so the nymphs with Jupiter could flee. Later, when Juno saw through Echo's little game, she decided to end Echo's talking and cursed her to only be able to say what others had said. Now, seeing Narcissus, Echo is, like all others, instantly in love. She starts to follow him slowly and notices that the closer she gets to him, the more passionate her love becomes. She wants to say something, to tell her of her deep love, but she cannot be the one who speaks first. She's not able to speak first. Narcissus, who had wandered off from his hunting group, calls for them. "Is someone here?" "Here," Echo says happily. Narcissus looks around, but can't see anyone. "Come here," he calls, and Echo says the same back to him. Confusing situation this must be. This goes on for a while. Nobody said Narcissus was smart. Once more, he starts to say, "Come, we'll go together," and Echo happily says, "Together," And she thinks this is the moment to come out of her hiding place. She runs to him and tries to throw her arms around him. Narcissus is not here for that idea, and he runs away, screaming. After some back and forth, where Echo cleverly uses certain parts of Narcissus's sentences, she reaches a forest and hides in it, ashamed and in love. She lives in caves now and is permanently sad. Her body fades away because of her own pain and neglect. Eventually, only her bones and her voice remain. The bones turn to stone. The voice hides in forests and caves and mountains. Narcissus, meanwhile, had outrun Echo, but also other nymphs and men. One of them, feeling offended by the refusal, had begged the goddess Nemesis, goddess of revenge, to make Narcissus as in love as they were, and to make his love as untouchable as theirs. And so it was. Somewhere there was a lake with a silvery surface, absolutely gorgeous. The lake was never before discovered by people. Even animals had not disturbed it. Even sticks from the surrounding trees never touched the water. The area was beautiful, green. The trees gave shade from the sun. Here, Narcissus decided to rest after a tiring hunt. When he's going to drink from the lake, however, he finds himself unbelievably attracted to his reflection. And here we go, people. He keeps staring at himself. It looks like his reflection is made of pure marble. His eyes are stars, his hair like that of Bacchus or Apollo. Notice the mention of Bacchus here. This is most likely anachronistic. As we'll see next episode, it is unlikely that Narcissus is already familiar with the god Bacchus or Dionysus, as he's still quite young right now. But on the other hand, these stories are not all in chronological order, so everything is possible, I suppose. Anyway, Narcissus' reflection is utterly beautiful. Narcissus falls in love. Narcissus falls as in love with himself as his other admirers had been. He's in deep shit now. He wants himself. And he tries, got to give it to him. He kisses the reflection, but the water is in the way, and every time he tries to embrace himself, he grips nothing. At this point, Narcissus is mostly confused. At the start, it seems that he is aware that this is his own reflection, but now he's just gone. He's totally separated himself from the reflection and no longer recognizes that it is, in fact, himself. He doesn't realize that the thing he wants will disappear from the lake if he turns around. But of course, he will never leave, so he will never realize this. There's this one movie we once watched in class. Honestly, we watched only a part of it. It was a French movie called Métamorphose, from 2014, according to IMDb, directed by Christophe Honoré. It's a recreation of Ovid's Metamorphoses in an interesting way. I tell you this because what stood out the most to me was a portrayal of Narcissus' story. In that, it was unbelievably funny to me and my friends. I don't think that was the point, but it was hilarious. Narcissus, some random French boy in this, rejects Echo on the playground, I think. Then he goes, for some reason, to a rooftop and masturbates there. While this in itself is not necessarily funny, it is in fact a good interpretation of Narcissus' self-love. The giant see-through impression of his own head in the sky was the most hilarious thing I'd seen all year, probably. Do you know the meme of the guy with the cowboy hat just screaming, overlaid see-through over a picture of some mountains or something? Yeah, it was like that. I've never been so glad a class was over, so I could finally laugh without insulting the film. At the end of this, Narcissus throws himself off the roof for some reason. Honestly, it's more clear in the ancient text what happened than in this movie. Well, now that I've rejected a girl and masturbated while hallucinating about my own giant head in the sky, time to yeet myself off this roof. Anyway, back to the story. The actual ancient story, I mean. Narcissus is sitting by the lake. Not hungry, not sleeping, only looking at the beautiful reflection. Eventually he decides it's time for a dramatic monologue. He addresses this to the trees that surround him. Who has ever loved as much as he has? The trees should know. They are old, and other people should have taken shelter here, other couples. Is there any of them who was as painfully in love as he is now? The only thing separating him from his loved one is a tiny bit of water. Isn't that terrible? The other person wants to be with him too, because every time Narcissus reaches out, he reaches back. And every time Narcissus tries to kiss him, he tries to kiss him too. Why does the person in the lake not come to him? Why does he stay away? When one stretches their arms, the other does too. When one laughs, the other laughs as well. When one cries, so does the other. When Narcissus tries to talk to him, he answers back, but the words are not heard. And, oh, it's himself. He's realized that he is in fact in love with himself. It's his reflection in the lake's water. Should he call himself? And what then? What he wants is already here, sort of, if there was a way to be separate from his own body. His sadness saps his life force away. He realizes his time has almost come. I wonder how long he's sat there. Death will be nice for him, he thinks. The pain will go away, but for the reflection he would have wanted a longer life. Now two people will die as one, with one breath. He looks at himself, but his tears break the water surface and make the reflection go away. Narcissus panics. Where is it going? Why is he fleeing? Don't leave him alone. Narcissus rips off the top of his rope and pounds his chest in grief and misery, a common way to express grief in ancient time, by the way, though I mostly see women do it in texts. He even bruises his own chest doing this. Eventually, he sees his own wounds, because the water is still once more, and he can't take it anymore. Narcissus wastes away, melts away. He has none of the beauty left that Echo once wanted so much, and Echo is nearby. She sees him there, and while she's still mad at him, she's also sad. He cries, "Poor me," and she responds the same. Sounds of grief echo through the forest, Narcissus and Echo together. At the end, he tells the reflection, "Goodbye," and Echo says goodbye to Narcissus. He lays down in the grass, his eyes keep looking at his reflection, his love, until he closes them for the last time. Even in the underworld, Narcissus keeps looking at himself in the waters of the river Styx. If you remember, his mother was a nymph, and he has sisters, also nymphs, who cut off a lock of their hair in grief and as sacrifice. The nymphs in the woods all cried for Narcissus, and Echo cried when they did. Everything was ready for a funeral, but Narcissus's body was nowhere to be found. Only a yellow flower stood where he had been. And we're done for today. Next time, someone's baby is back. I know him, you know him. He was born out of Jupiter's thigh. He does some shit in Thebes. As always, follow me on Twitter @MetamorphosesK and on Tumblr @key-metamorphoses. Until next time, bye.